Καλημέρα, καλησπέρα, καληνύχτα. No matter where in this wild, wacky and sometimes wonderful world you might be, thank you for making the Highbury Squad part of your day. It is a new week, it's a blank canvas. Let's paint pictures, let's tell Arsenal stories with one of our club's former midfield maestros. Let's rock and roll, kids.
Mind the gap between the train and the platform. Please stand clear of the discussion doors. The next stop is Highbury Squad.
Ah, the joy of this photo. Just want to keep it up for an extra 10 seconds. Look at that. Relief, happiness, joy. Schoolboy stuff, really, when you think about it. Nothing different from when they played back in the day in their streets or in their school. And I have someone with me this evening, my wingman, who has done it all at schoolboy level and won some of the biggest with the Gunners. One of your favourites is back. That's right. Midfield maestro, David Hillier.
Good evening. Hello, everybody. Nice to be here. Done it all as a youth team player. Done really well. Managed to win the FA Youth Cup with, I must say, the help of a certain Mr. Campbell, who scored many a goal. I think he got a hat-trick in the final as well.
Was the final against Doncaster?
Yeah. I think we drew one leg and battered them. I think it was five or six.
Yeah.
Good times back in the day. Good times.
See, this is where I bring up the photo, but today I had to make room for so many photos because there's so many things that I am going to talk to you about. And by the way, squaddies, as you know, Super Kev is watching. So be sure to give and send your love. He is recovering like the absolute monster that he is. And he's going to be back here at Squad Central soon. Our chief like officer, always encouraging you guys to hit the like button. We have PW here and Chemo finally catching us live. And thanks to Chemo this evening, we're going to have some fantastic images to share with you. And the one at the top of the show was his indeed. And really appreciate you, Chemo. Thanks as always for letting us use your photography. I love what you did with this one. So atmospheric. The colors are great. I love the shadows in the background. Go follow Chemo, please, at Chemo FC. You won't be disappointed. Does some phenomenal comps as well. And part of the Highbury Squad family now. So, Chemo, thanks a lot to you. Right, kids, good evening to everyone in the house. Ian's here, Trev's here, Yanto's here, Mark's here. Saw you playing your guitar on Facebook. We got a lot of talented squaddies, David. A lot of talent in the house.
Can you see what's in the background? Look, I've been trying for about 10 years.
And how'd you play?
It sounds all right in my ears, but not to anybody else's. Yeah. I'm a tryer. I can't play for long enough to get my fingers sore enough so that I can keep playing, if you know what I mean. I play for sort of like a couple of hours and then I leave it for a week and they just don't feel right again. But I will get round to it one day when I retire.
I love the idea of playing the guitar and I have two. But I've failed miserably. I've got a small hand and getting my hand around it all isn't easy. So, yeah. Listen, enough about our Grammy award-winning skills,
no worries. But could Chemo maybe get a photo of me and make my teeth look like Gabrielle's? Because they look smart. I want a set of them. Yeah.
I'm sure he'll do whatever you like. Speaking, he's not flashing his gnashes right here.
No, in the other one though, with the all six.
In the other one, he's totally flashing those. Look at them. That's beautiful.
That is
a boy who goes to the dentist regularly. Brilliant stuff. You know, I don't like usually saying stuff like this, but we do have a handsome team. You know.
I think all the attraction with Ben White as well. I know we're going to talk about later, but he is quite a pretty boy, isn't he?
Yeah.
All amongst the team, we had the best looking boys. We had Tony Adams, Steve Bold, you know, proper lookers.
Hey, come on. Beauties inside and outside. And I tell you, we've had some beautiful plays over the years. There's no doubt about that. Right. 200 of you in live chat. Thanks so much for joining. I have a brilliant agenda, Love Island Ben White. And you know what? Seeing as we mentioned Ben White, why don't we start with Ben White so we can get this one out the way? I've been really curious to know what Dave thinks of Ben White and England. And, you know, we've had some players in the past that probably should have played a lot more for England. And this is a case of maybe, is it Benjamin White not wanting to play for Southgate versus England? You're an England man. You love watching your country. What is your take on this? And do you think Benjamin, I love this, by the way, this is also Chemo's, this is him to Southgate.
Yeah.
Bro, what? Has he made a mistake, Dave? Has Benjamin made a mistake?
In terms of what? Is his football career? Or just in the way people are seeing him? Because I think there's a lot of people with some quite harsh opinions about, you know, what you should and shouldn't do as a footballer. You know, they've got to remember that there is obviously the case that he hasn't played in his last few involvements. And that obviously he came back from the World Cup because of that, we think. But there's speculation now that maybe there was a little bit of a, you know, a little set to or an argument or some sort of disagreement between him and possibly one of the assistants or the coaches. And that's a very important relationship. I'm sure we're going to, I think we might even be touching on that later on. Because when the manager's not there, and he's not there a lot of the time because he's doing other things or he leaves early or he just implements certain things and the coach does the bulk of the organizing and the setting out, they're important. And if you fall out with them and you're not in the side as well, then I think he's definitely got a reason to say, I want to concentrate on my family and football. But some people have been portraying it as if he has made this comment about leaving the door open. This is what's bothering me. Everybody sort of seems to be missing the point that he just said he didn't want to play. And Gareth Southgate has said, you know, I'm not going to rule it out in the future. So he has left the door open. And people are picking on Ben because of that, saying, you know, well, he's sort of saying he wants to come back. If he wants to come back later on, he thinks it'd be open, but that's not the case. I want to say that straight away. He ain't said nothing. He just don't want to play. And I respect that. But I also understand that playing for your country is a massive thing. It's really important to a lot of players, probably 95% of players. But you've got to respect the fact that not everybody wants to spend their time doing that outside of football.
Is that something
and he is a special case.
Is that something you find difficult to understand? Because even for football fans, okay, I used to love watching, you know, when there was an international break, it meant a lot. To me, the World Cup is still the pinnacle of football. But with the Champions League and the power of the Champions League, for a lot of the younger generation, and I'm not saying this is for Benjamin at all, because it's not that. We're talking about what has become important in football. And the Champions League has definitely taken on a beastly persona on its own, David. Do you think that international football means the same today as it did, say, when you and Kev were coming through the ranks?
I think it's a different generation of supporter, for a start. You know, I think you go back sort of to the 60s, 70s, 80s, even up into the 90s, I think football, playing for your country was the pinnacle. And, you know, making 100 caps and, you know, playing with great players. But I think where the squads have got so big, there's a lot of international influences in all different leagues. Everyone's mixed up now. I think everybody plays together. And although the big tournaments like the Euro Championships and the World Cup will still attract big attention, I do feel that all the build-up games and there's just not that feeling anymore. I think people would probably rather see their club side, you know, playing brilliant and winning a game, if I'm totally honest. I think if most had a choice, unless it was a big game, if it's a big game, definitely. And if there's no other games on, which is normally the case. So international weekends, obviously you've not got any other teams. So they kind of have got that all that airtime, everyone will be doing that because they're not doing their club stuff. But I definitely think the generation now, supporters are less patriotic, because there's so many different people from different origins and from different countries. So I think that has an impact on it. But I don't think this is, obviously don't have nothing to do with Ben. Like I said, Ben is making his own decisions. And as far as I'm concerned, he's fully respected to do that.
And England's loss is Arsenal's gain, isn't it? I mean, I think we live in a time, and we had this debate on our show not so long ago. You know, would you rather see your country win the World Cup or your club win the Champions League? And it was unanimous in, you know, wanting to see Arsenal win the Champions League. What I don't like about this conversation is how we're judging people, not knowing the true story. Of course, The Athletic came out with the story that there was a disagreement. Maybe even the fact that the baton has been used against Ben because he said he doesn't watch football. And as a professional footballer, I've been wanting to ask you this, because I think it's unfair that if that was and is true, that, you know, the whole you don't watch football narrative, which he was very honest about. And I was saying, like, my partner publishes books. The last thing she wants to do when she comes home is read a book. I have to watch six or seven, however many films, one a day at least. When I come home, I didn't want to watch a film. Are you different? Do you understand that as a former player?
I think as a former player and growing up with, like even from the youth team, moving into the reserves and the first team, there's always players that do really study football. You know, they do try and watch all the games. They know all about what's happening in all the leagues, where the teams are, etc. There's always two or three players in every side. I think I might stand corrected on this, but Sol Campbell was like that. So Sol Campbell mm-hmm. knew everything about what was going on. He's very intelligent when it came to football. I think he was at the School of Excellence as well. And I think there's a story about when he was there, he used to have almost like journals and logs of who played in games and like, lots of games over the top couple of divisions. So you'll always get players like that that know the stuff. But I think a lot of players want to switch off, don't necessarily want to watch football. You probably watch enough now by having to stay at the club till 4 or 5 o'clock, because quite often you find the teams now meet up in the morning early and they go all the way through the day together. Whereas before we'd shoot off at 1 o'clock or, you know, that would be it. And if it was a special video session, we'd have to go in and watch a video. But because they've got that analysis and assessment all the time now, I think there's lots of time for them. And I think that plays a big part. I mean, especially in the way Arsenal are playing at the moment, I think it's key. I reckon Arteta is spending just as much time with the team going over their patterns of play.
Oh, David froze. Uh-oh, can't have that. He's just in the middle of some magic here. 400 plus of you in live chat, hit that like button. Have I frozen or has David frozen? Because he's frozen for me in time, just like the animated film. Ooh, okay, we'll try and get him back. Let's see what we can do here. By the way, I've got my Irene Cara flash dance routine going on today, trying to get all fit and lean. You back? He's not back. Man down. Uh-oh. David is frozen. I'm good. David's frozen. But we need him because this is good juice. This is good stuff. And getting the player perspective, as you guys all know here on HS, he's going to duck out and duck back in. Now, listen, there's 440 of you in live chat. Imagine if you all hit the like button, we'd have a lot more than 64. You're lucky Kev's not here, because he would say, you know what, I'll stay out frozen until you guys hit the like button. So it's time to bring in Vinny with the dicky bow for Super Kev, because Kev is watching. Hit that like button, please. It helps the channel. Only moon it once, though. You don't need to do it twice, okay? Because then it gets lost in the mix. Saving Private Hillier. Last week it was Saving Private Raya. Yeah, 64 is poor. When you've got almost, 500 in live chat, Don Juan, it is absolutely One-on-one, Soph, we need David to score a last-minute winner. He will come back, trust me. Here's what he's doing right now. He's going up to get one of his kids to try and help him get back online. That's exactly what's happening. It's happened with Sir Bob Wilson. It happened, as you know, Aaron Ramsdale came into the show to help his dad when he was on for the first time. So we get a lot of that. So hit the like button. Let me see that. And I tell you what, if we get to 500 likes tonight, if they'll get 500 in live chat and we get 500 likes, I'll start giving away shit. If not, I'm going to give you all a yellow card. All right, hit the like button. So yeah, Benjamin White, and we'll talk to Dave a little bit more, and we'll keep our eye on that story as it progresses. Listen, I think the bottom line is, I'm not saying he doesn't care, but he's just not bothered. And one of the reasons why I think the Arsenal came out with this announcement on the same day was to show the support. By the way, Adu and Mikel, always, I mean, this 3GQ dudes right here, isn't it? If you're listening on our audio platform, thank you. Those listening on replay on YouTube, thanks also. 500 of you in live chat right now. Let's get those likes up. But these guys look like they're out of Adu, especially. They look like they're doing, the photographer said, hey, look away from the camera and give us a big smile. You get that GQ moment. By the way, if you haven't seen the GQ Things Kai Havertz Can't Live Without vignette, it's in German, but it's got subtitles, of course. You're going to have to find it. It is brilliant. He's so deadpan and so funny. I just adore him to bits. As you know, I've been in King Kai's corner from day one. But yeah, he signed a new contract. He's ours. We love these moments. And I think he's been an unsung hero. I mean, look, even Zinchenko's excited about it. For those listening on audio, it's the one where Ben White is holding Zinchenko by the scruff of his jersey. And yeah. I mean, look at the love there. It's just amazing. And I think Ben White is just one of those players now that's ingrained himself in the Arsenal squad and had to adapt when he first came. Let's get some of your comments up while we are waiting for Mr. Hillier to come back. Congratulations to him. Absolutely. I wish Super Kev, you know what? He's listening right now. You know what he's saying? Bloody hell, Dave, get that internet fixed, won't you? That's exactly what's happening right now. We're going to talk about Gabriel. Here's what I'm thinking. I think we're finally mastering the dark arts. All right. And for me, if you remember, James Green on a previous show talked about the dark arts and the Arsenal and how we need to pull players from the international break. James called this. And last week when we did a show on mental and all that type of stuff, which we're going to ask David about, the dark arts rising at the Arsenal, kids. I reckon, listen, no, I don't think a Brazilian really ever wants to pull out of a Brazilian squad. And this is just Soph's conspiracy theory here. But I do believe the dark arts are rising at the Arsenal. And we're getting better and better doing this type of stuff. I hope he's okay. I know some people have mentioned a tendon, etc. But I'm not going to speculate on what his injury is until we know exactly what the truth is. And like Alison, I do think that part of that Gabriel will be fine. Let's see what David's saying. He's just WhatsApped me. Let's check our WhatsApp. Let's hope these WhatsApp messages. Okay, here we go. Laptop just effed up. Uh-oh. Use your phone. Use your phone. Okay. Well, yeah, there you go. Use your phone. He'll be back. Yeah, so let's see. I only saw your email 2 days ago, but was very pleased to get it. Thanks for your kindness. Oh, you're welcome, Evgeny. I love sending you guys emails. Bloody laptops is in the chat. Almost 600 in live chat, Hills. Get your ass back in here. Use your phone. Go get one of the kids' devices. I don't care what you do. It's pretty much like, you know, hey, the almost invincible season. Make it happen. All right. Get yourself back in here. Thank you, Newman. Wonder what you want. I'm a very kind woman. Gabriel equals warrior. Yes. Who do you think's been the best Arsenal player so far this season? Oh, I think they've all been great. I think Odegaard has been. Gabriel and Odegaard and Ben for me have been the best, I think. But we've got a long way to go. So, you know, we need to kind of hold our awards ceremony on that for a little bit. 117 likes, 580 in live chat. David Hillier here. Who leaves a girl hanging on a date on a Monday night? Huh? Monday madness. I don't know. Why don't we get to the next subject and then we'll bring Dave in as we go, seeing as I have so many of you here. Please stick with us. By the way, what do you guys think about Champions League versus World Cup? I'm sure most of you would like to see Arsenal in the... Forget I even asked. Just leave it, right? Just leave it. Okay, let's talk about the league versus Europe. There's one, because this question's coming up a lot right now. Why don't I start with this and I'll put your questions up, your answers up. The league versus Europe, we're in there, kids. We have an opportunity to win both. Now, listen, it's not going to be easy at all, at all. Hold on a second. I have a surprise for you. Yay. You back?
On the phone, yeah. Nightmare, innit?
Good, so it's fine. I've got to
look really close and put a big bald head right in the middle of the screen.
That's okay. Here's the next one. Okay, so Ben White, we've wrapped that up. We know how you feel about, you know, playing for England. And, you know, I know that you would prefer Arsenal to win the Premier League or the Champions League rather than see England win the World Cup. That's right?
100%, yeah. I think so, yeah. I mean, I'd be very proud as an Englishman if they did do that. But yeah, I think if I had to choose one, yeah, I'll be honest, I'd go for the Arsenal.
Excellent. Okay, now we're going to talk a little bit about the league versus Europe. You have played in both, been triumphant, been there, seen there, seen it, done it, worn the shirt. Managing Europe and the league is new territory for Mikel Arteta, though, David. And I think one of the things in terms of learning, you know, he lost that semi-final to the man he replaced. That was very painful in Europa League. We even go back to the pedigree in Europe since you guys won it. It has been really, really poor. And there's no doubt that our European pedigree went up a notch the other night against Porto. However, you know, you need to do a lot more than that to kind of, you know, be talked about. As much as your opponents, opposing fans, use it as a baton to kind of batter us. The fixture list is going to get congested at a critical time. You played in a time where squads were so much smaller, yet the intensity is the same. I don't know if you can say the intensity was different then than it is now. Maybe the instant gratification is a lot different. How do you think Mikel's going to navigate through this next period after the international break? The Chelsea game's put off. Luckily, Wolves got dumped out of the FA Cup.
Yep.
But how do you see it? How do you see this process going for him?
I think it's another stage for him, isn't it? He sort of, last year in the league, coming second and going the way it did at the end, he must have learned from that. And I think this experience is now sort of the beginning of what he was doing a couple of years ago regarding the league. He's finding out what it takes to go as far as you can in Europe. And I don't think he expects to go all the way to the Champions League final and win it. Not in his first season. I think, you know, that's a big ask. And I think he'll be looking to gain experience from this. I think the manager would probably prioritise the league, in all fairness. And I think I think they've got more chance of winning the league than they have the Champions League.
Which do you think fans should want more? Because I really wanted the Premier League. And I had a conversation with my good friend Harry, who kind of convinced me that winning the Champions League puts us on the same pedestal. Okay, not equally in terms of how many times they've won it, but it would shut up Chelsea fans, Manchester United fans, Liverpool fans, dare I say even Aston Villa and Nottingham Forest fans. And when you see like Declan Rice playing against Pepe, who, by the way, credit to him, we gave on the show last week for still playing football.
Fantastic.
It's amazing. Which one do you think Arsenal fans should want more?
Well, I think they should agree with me, obviously, Sophie. They should want the Premier League because it's the week in, week out football. It's the one that they... If they broke it down to how many comments they make to their friends about games throughout the season and, you know, their excitement and, you know, possibly their disappointment, all the sort of involvement it has in their life, then 100% it will be Arsenal Premier League more than Arsenal Europe, even if they got all the way to the final. You know, they wouldn't be talking about all of the rounds up to it next season because there'd be a game every week. They'd reminisce about it. So your bread and butter is your Premier League, is your league football. I think when you've won the league two or three times in a period of time, you know, like Man City have, then I think your fans have kind of got a right to sort of maybe cross over a little bit and say, I wonder what it's like, you know, winning Champions League. I'd like to win that this year. That's probably a fair way of spreading it out for me. But I think, you know, first of all, it's your Premier League.
Mm. Okay. Let me ask you this one. It's interesting in because we're going to go on to mentality versus talent next. And after the Porto win, Thierry Henry was on American television with Jamie Carragher and Micah Richards. And they interviewed Saka first, and they asked Saka which one he would want. And he said the Premier League. And then they asked David Raya, and David Raya said both. Do you read into that too much, or do you think that's Saka growing up in England, being part of the club, a Highlander, wanting to win the league, having seen all the history and understanding it, maybe a little bit more than that? I'm not saying David Raya doesn't. And is that David Raya being a total Rottweiler a la Mikel Arteta, insatiable appetite, I just want to win everything? Should we read too much into that or no?
And I think it might be a combination of Saka just being totally honest and, you know, only having his own experience to draw from. And he's, like you said, he's been at Arsenal all that time. He's gone through all this process to be where they are. So I think he understands for most of the fans how they feel that, you know, the club is in you. Whereas I think David Reyes is a stock answer. I think if he was at another top European club and you asked him exactly the same question about that club, he would say both. But if you offered that to Bakayo, if he was playing in a different country, he might quite honestly say, I'd still prefer to win the Premier League. Even if he was playing in the Bundesliga, he'd still be honest. So I think I think Raya is just it's a good answer, isn't it? He's being PC. He's being nice.
he's smart. He's a smart lad.
Whereas I think Bakayo just speaks from the heart. Whenever you see him in any interview, in anything he's doing, even when it's a still picture of him, you can imagine him being really nice and just being honest, even though you don't know what you're saying. I'm really proud of him. I think he's a great lad. But Raya, as I said, I think it's just the stock answer. It's a big tough guy. He's a goalkeeper, obviously. You know.
Yeah, he is, and he's certainly he had that seminal moment the other night where he really needed that, didn't he? And Arsenal fans really fell in love with him that night.
Yeah, I mean, the with two saves, wasn't it? Fantastic. Both of them, I thought, you know, he was very strong in the shootout. I think he had a pretty decent game as well. You've got to give credit to Porto. I thought they was a difficult side. With a very good game plan. And they was a lot more honest, I must say, at Emirates than they were at home. With their, the theatrical business and falling over and all of that. So it made a better game. And I think they enjoyed a good part of that game and deserved to get as far.
All right, 670 of you in live chat, hit that like button, moon it, kiss it, lick it, whatever you want to do to it, just do it the once. If you're enjoying this conversation with former Arsenal midfield maestro David Hillier, we're going to get stuck into a little bit of mentality versus talent now, because one of the things I've been harping on about on this show is that we have talent in our squad. There's no doubt about it. And I believe the type of talent that can win the double this year if they wanted to. But mental is going to play a massive part. And the other night against Porto, I do think that we overcame a huge mental obstacle. I'm not saying that we're the finished article mentally, but when you go from the Champions League, missing out, Tottenham pipping us to the post, coming back, challenging for the title last season, missing out when we were ahead and should have won it, coming back and doing it again this season in terms of competing, being up there in a time where Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola are managers, David, it is a massive mental step, I believe. And I've always said that this team will win and lose on mental. You played for a manager that created the Arsenal versus everyone. First, for the younger listeners, I want you to explain that moment and how it felt when George Graham spoke to you guys. That video as well, where you're all lined up against the wall. Yeah. And he's I mean, that to this day, Arsenal fans play and share over and over again. And then I want to kind of...
Yeah,
go on.
I was going to say that was because of more of an incident rather than sort of an everyday sort of occurrence with George. He wouldn't just get us out there every other week and, you know, give us that talk. But I think in general, what he demanded first was a physical application by everybody. He didn't like anybody not pulling their weight in training or, you know, trying to slack when he was doing anything. And I think once you've all got tired together quite often on a regular basis, and then you recover together, which he knew we was bonding, I think the physical aspect of your mental health, so i.e. being in good shape, good condition, being in sort of good banter with your team, he knew back then that it would work. He called it camaraderie. You know, everybody started pulling together, and I think he knew he had something. So it was very important for him to keep a high level of fitness, even though he let the lads, you know, mm-hmm. let their head down quite often. He didn't say too much about that. But that, I think we got our strength from, and our mental strength from, being physically strong, because they was probably definitely the strongest side I played in. I know I dropped down the divisions, but you would expect that everybody's as fit as everybody in the first couple of football leagues, but different teams apply themselves different, definitely. And I think having been at a top team and a lower team, and this is no disrespect to the lower team, but I just think players take care of themselves better. And when you do that, then the mental stuff is easier, especially as a team. And I think Arsenal showed that against Porto, because that was energy, energy, energy. You know, they didn't let up, they kept pushing on. And even against Brentford, I thought the same. They had to pull on something other than their talent, because their talent clearly weren't paying the bills that day. And I thought the energy and effort in getting that win was superb as well.
Mikey, your timing couldn't be more perfect. In terms of Xhaka, because for me, I think the shift started last season and Xhaka was a massive, massive part of that. I don't think we really believed that we could win the league last season. I think we thought, wow, I can't believe we're in this position ahead of maybe our time and the schedule. But Xhaka was a true gladiator last season and he was a massive leader. And when he left, we were really scared, David, about where that leadership would come, which players would grow into the role. And I will utilize any opportunity to share this photo, because this reminds me of the Almost Invincibles. This reminds me of the Invincibles side. This reminds me of old school Arsenal backline that used to intimidate teams in the tunnel. Now, I'm not saying again that we're quite there yet, but when you see process to progress, and of course it has to lead to success, but when you see this, and thanks Kimo again for the shot, and he's even immortalized it in black and white as well. That one, I know you would love, Squaddies. Nice. Very nice. Very cool. I might make that into a t-shirt. I talked to Kimo about it. And then you see this, you know, and look how they're looking at the opposition. Talk me through that a little bit, because I was afraid where it would come from. And there's quite a few, not only, you know, the back line, David, but also Kai Havertz, Martin Odegaard, you know, Saka's evolved and developed. You just have players who are ready for it.
Yeah, I think what's quite unique about Arsenal at the moment is, like you said, they're players of all different sizes and, you know, body shapes and that. But at the moment, every player looks strong and confident. And that's what you're seeing in the tunnel there. That's them just saying, you know, feeling strong. I don't think they're trying to necessarily sort of intimidate the opposition directly by looking over there, but they feel like they feel good before a game. That's confidence. Their shoulders are back, you know, the chins are out, and they're ready to go to battle. And I think that's what Arteta's put in that side. He's demanded the work on the pitch first. He knows they can play the football, but he's demanded the work, and the players are working it out. And I think again against Brentford, that showed. It showed, because you can only do so much as a manager from the side. It's down to the players on the pitch. And I don't think he tweaks it as much as people think he does. You know, because honestly, as a player, you can't take on board instructions every 2 or 3 minutes. It's not possible. So half them, three quarters of them messages, 80% of them messages don't really get out there. And players know what they're doing. So, you know, you've got to give credit to them. And I thought they adapted really well against Brentford, carried on pushing. And I was so pleased that Kai got the goal. I think he deserved it. And there's a lot of talk from Thomas Frank, weren't there, about him shouldn't have been on the pitch. But then you could argue when our players get dragged down in the box, it's a penalty. So it's all swings and roundabouts. But really pleased for him.
Yeah, it was great. And, you know, I know I show this picture and they love it, but there are other players. And, you know, for those who aren't watching, I've put up players of Declan Rice, Donna Potts. Welcome to the show. Absolutely right. He's been massive this season. He's just been, I mean, you could argue at this point one of Arsenal's best ever signings, but of course that has to result in winning things as well, or does it? You know, we'll get onto that in just a minute. I put up pictures of, you know, players like Trossard, who some of our fans poo-pooed the signing of. Everyone was mental for Mudryk, and he's just been absolutely brilliant. Really just comes on, does his job, doesn't complain, starts, doesn't start, super sub. I know he's had some bad games, don't all players. And then Dave mentioned Kai Havertz as well, who has come on so much during the season and become such an important part now of what we're doing. David Raya showing his mental and his talent in the Champions League. The evolution of, you know, Ben White, no matter what's going on with England, we know what he does for the Arsenal. And I think one of the most important things is the manager. He's come across as super arrogant and egotistical at times, and some opposing fans hate that. There was a time where I didn't quite like him, if I'm being honest. He didn't come across as quite likable, but then I said, if he wins stuff, what do I care? Who cares what I think of whether or not he's likable or not? But when they're yours, you do tend to start, you know, falling in love with them or liking them. And the other thing too is he's always, in the past when we failed, David talked about players needing to show courage. And it seems to me that he's showing a little bit more courage, and maybe the evolution of his own talent and mentality is gone to another level. Talk me through that a little bit.
Yeah, I agree totally. I think he has. And it was like what I said about him in preparing the team 3 years ago to try and start challenging for the Premier League in maybe 2 or 3 years' time after him starting. He's at that stage now, and if they do progress in the Premier League and maybe win it, then he'll be thinking next year, maybe I could do a bit better in the Champions League if they don't win it this year. So, and I think exactly in his career, in his personality, he will develop as he's going along and learn. I think some of his early stuff did seem a little bit arrogant, some of his some interviews, but only because I think he was just a bit tempestuous, you know. He was young, fresh to the job, and he had a lot of hope and ambition, and he outwardly showed it. When now I think he's learnt to control that, and now that's made his players much more committed to the cause.
I think he concentrates on their well-being all the time. So he makes them feel good. And I think he's doing that for himself as well. And I think he's handling things better in the media. So, yeah, I think he might have been like kind of in the beginning, but he's certainly evolving as a manager. He'll be looking at his, you know, still being a manager when he's 60 and winning everything, maybe even being the manager of for his country and winning a World Cup. I mean, he's got to have those sort of ambitions.
He's definitely ambitious. There's no doubt about that. And he's always kind of talked about wanting to stay at Arsenal for as long as he can. Modern day football, that's a little bit harder to do. You played for a manager who, when we went 2-0 up at Anfield in 89, was telling everyone not to get excited and pushing everybody back. We were accused, not only as a team, I've been accused many times, you're too emotional, Soph, you're coming from an emotional place. And I'm like, dude, our manager's emotional. All he did last season was talk about emotions. And that overspilled, I think, onto the pitch against, you know, teams like Newcastle. We let our emotions get carried away. He did get a yellow card the other night, but so did the Porto manager. Emotion from your manager, David, take me beyond the white lines a little bit. Do players like that or not? Do you kind of like, you know, in the dressing room after say, well, that was a bit embarrassing from George, wasn't it?
I've been under three managers really in my time. Obviously, there was more at the clubs I was at, but they was there for a short period and then I wasn't. So, you know, I've had three long-termish managers and obviously George being the longest. And I just think you have a respect for them, the way they manage you, and you have a respect, they have one back for you. And if it works, then I think that creates the perfect balance. And I would have to say that George, again, just add that perfect balance with players. He'd put his arm around one and he'd give another one a kick up the backside. And I think that that was his level. But I think with Mikel, I do think that he'll be looking to improve on things. I don't think he deserved to get a booking, I've got to say as well, because all he did was put his arms up, didn't he? He just disagreed with a decision. Mm-hmm. There was no call for cards or anything like that. So I just think the referee on that instance, I think he got it wrong. And
what about getting into spats with other managers and stuff at the end, at the final whistle? We saw it, of course, with Klopp during the match at Anfield. But this at the end, the Porto manager should never have lit that cigar. Let's all be honest. That was a bit premature on his part, wasn't it? Dave, what do you think about moments like this?
I think he got it wrong probably in that moment. And he would admit it, but he can't. So he's just going to, you know, just try and hope it goes away. I don't think it was a proud moment for him because any point he can walk away and he knows he probably thought, oh, I shouldn't have. Because we don't know what's been said as well, because there was allegations that something was said about family or something. I don't know.
Apparently he insulted his family. So and
It's difficult. I've played in matches where there's been insults thrown around between players, and those two managers are both ex-players. So I think sometimes you never know whether there's a little bit of history. You never know whether one knows the sort of keyword that's going to start the other one off. He's heard something about, you know, a lot goes on. So any way that you can get one over on a player, and if you know something, sometimes you just get a bit bitchy. And I think it probably just something like that. And it didn't need to happen.
Do you know what I think it is? And I think Arteta's very good at the dark arts silently, right? When we lost you for a minute, I was talking about the dark arts rising at the Arsenal. And he doesn't forget. And this season, we've had a lot of justice or vengeance, call it what you want, moments against team, payback. And I even think in Dubai, when everyone went apeshit about this, poorly drawn Arsenal, well done. It's the steak moment from Dubai. Eat more steak, Mikel, is what I say. I think that he never forgets. And I believe that he used, just as he did Ivan Toney when we saw in All or Nothing, that moment, I think he probably showed the video of the Porto manager and the team celebrating at the end of the match, lighting their cigars. He's like that. Does that work with players? Did stuff like that used to work with you?
I think probably, yeah, it helped a little bit, you know, a little bit of sort of stimulation from the opposition in regard of disrespecting us, or, you know, even down to when we used to watch their videos and or videos of when we played them, and the manager would pick up on something, he'd say, don't let that happen again. So you would be aware, do you know what I mean? But I don't know, I think you just go out there and play.
Yeah. It's funny because a lot of older school players of your generation would say that, but in the modern game, a lot of players need stroking. You know, they need hugs.
Steady on, Soph.
What? Yeah.
It's okay. X-rated. No, you can't say that.
You know, mollycoddling. How about that?
No, I don't think they need mollycoddling. I think they get enough of it in the attention of, like, you know, the facilities they have, all the stuff that's done for them all day. I think that's enough. I don't think they need mollycoddling as people. I think they're still, you know, they want to be men. And, like I don't mean that in...
Don't worry, no one's going to get offended here. Men can be men. I like men to still be men, open doors and do manly things.
Yeah, no, they don't want people to just sort of like wipe their ass. They want to do all the things that normal people do, but they're very fortunate to have some really nice touches along the way. But I'm sure they love doing everything themselves, even when it comes down to cooking and that. I'm sure that they must really enjoy it rather than someone else doing it all the time. But I don't think I've gone off.
Do you enjoy cooking?
Yeah, I enjoy cooking. Yeah.
Are you a good cook?
I'm okay, but I don't prep. My wife does all the prep, and then I'll cook it to her specification.
That is proper team right there. That is the Arsenal way. That is proper team.
I still don't think it's a good deal, but that's for another conversation.
Totally. Okay. Top five talking points with Dave Hillier right here. We've talked about Benjamin White and England. We've talked about the league versus Europe, and just had a discussion on mentality versus talent. To wrap that one up, is there anyone in this squad that you think has much more mental strength than talent? Some players need that more than a God-given talent. Like Odegaard is just a God-given talented footballer.
Yeah. No, I'd agree. It takes a balance of players. There's all different. Yeah. And I think definitely the first player that springs to mind for me has got to be Gabriel. Because
we're coming on to him. They're all getting upset with me again, I thought, because I haven't mentioned him yet. So Kivior for everyone who's listening.
Okay.
Go on.
Okay. No, I think Kivior's still young, and he's not a donkey either. So I won't.
You had to bring that up again, didn't you? I thought we'd wash that one away.
I'd say Gabriel. I think when he's really focused and sort of in the zone, you can see it in his face. But sometimes he's maybe not the most talented. I don't think he's a player that you could go. He could go and play in the midfield at centre midfield. But I think Ben White could step in there. I think Saliba could step in there just because of the way they play and control the game. I think he is an out-and-out central defender who's 100% committed. And when he is like that and he's on point, he does everything right still. So I don't want to take anything away and say he's not a great footballer, but if they was doing super skills in the car park, he ain't as good as most of the other players at tricks and stuff, because that just don't seem his thing.
That's funny, because when they came here for the skills challenge in the summer, and Kai kind of, everyone was starting to get on Kai's back from then for a bloody MLS All-Star skills challenge. But you just made me chuckle because I remembered that.
Yeah, is that when they did the round the worlds and stuff like that?
Yeah.
But we had Anders Limpar. He was unbelievable. He had all them little tricks back then in the day.
He was so good. Kev raves about him all the time. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Here we go. Next one. This one will be close to your heart because I know you know some of the players, but also having come through the Arsenal, there's a massive summer again. I say this loosely, but every summer seems to be a massive summer. And it does seem this is a massive turning point for a lot of players, though, Dave, because they're not getting game time. Even when they're subs, some of them aren't being chosen. And there are players that really have had moments, you know, for us. Reece Nelson and his moment against Bournemouth. You know, you've had Emile Smith Rowe, who, let's be honest, a couple seasons ago, together with Saka, destroyed Tottenham in one half of football.
Yeah.
Eddie had his moments. The Man United game springs to mind, the 3-2 at the Emirates. But not every Highlander is a Bukayo Saka. And I think everyone wants them to be a Bukayo Saka, but life just doesn't work that way. Give me your take on what you think will happen, what you would like to see happen with the Highlanders who aren't getting as much game time at the Arsenal right now.
Well, again, I think they're a victim of the time. If they was playing back in our day, there'd only be 15, 16 players going to a match on a Saturday in the coach. So, you know, at some point you're really close to being involved, but the manager's got a much wider choice on the bench now, so there is that thing that they're going to have to accept that if they're on the bench, their odds are going to be shorter to get on, are going to be longer. And also, I think the players you mentioned have all, yes, they've all done really good things while they've played. They've had great games. They've come on and, you know, really, or started and played really well, and they deserve to get them opportunities. But I believe that they probably have had chances since then. I mean, Eddie's had quite a few games. He's come on. And when you don't hit them highs regularly and you're not, you know, doing much better than sort of even the player that's playing. So for him to get in above Kai Havertz now, what's Eddie going to have to do? Come on and score a hat-trick three times. So you've got to take your opportunities, and I do feel that maybe them players have just not followed up. Saka, once he got the team, he was in there week in, week out, because he was performing and doing things on the pitch on a regular basis. And you can blame that on not getting enough time because you're a sub, but that's the thing. But I don't think they can let him go, definitely. I don't think they can let him go until they get at least as good or better replacements.
It's funny, isn't it? Because it shows you the evolution, really, what Arteta has done. When at the time, I can't remember who I was talking to about this, but like Kieran Tierney was the it guy, you know? And a lot of us were like, oh, he's got captain material. And he did elevate the culture again, and he elevated production on the pitch. And you got really excited about that. But yet when you see what these players have done now, where the club is, I don't want to say they're not good enough, but they're just not at that level that they need to be. Like you said, you're not going to get ahead playing of Kai Havertz right now. You're not going to get ahead, you know, playing even against, you know, Kivior's had to wait his time. And I mean, look what he's doing with the games that he's been given. That's the difference. I think it's a massive difference and brilliant what you've just said, in the sense that are you taking your opportunities when they're given to you? And a lot of them haven't. They just haven't.
No, and it's unfortunate because, like I said, when you come on, it's almost like the expectations are higher. You've not got long to settle in the game, normally. You're coming on for a reason, normally, i.e. the team need a boost, which is more often than not, and maybe, you know, need to get a winning goal. Unless you'll bring, you know, your 4-5-0 up and then all the subs come on, which I don't think really stimulates you to go on and get more goals when you're playing in a team that are already ahead. When we saw the subs in our games when we were winning 4-5, 6-0. I think they tried for a little while really hard to get involved, but the rest of the team almost had settled into the win. So, you know, that's not a fortunate situation for them. So the odds are really, really hard to achieve that. So they've got to work even harder. But like I said, I just don't think those guys are full. And I think they probably admit it. They haven't fully taken their opportunities. And that's just the victim. But then I don't think they'll be leaving. Like I said, I've, you know, players can just, you know, have 4 or 5 year contracts and, you know,
sit it out and earn $100,000 a week and be happy.
Yeah,
they don't have to go anywhere if they don't want to, do they?
It depends if you know, sort of how ambitious they are. And if they do, if first team football is what they really, really want, then they will ask if they can go. And I'm sure the club wouldn't stand in their way.
Yeah. I can see Eddie going to like a Brighton. I can see him shining and being a starter for them week in, week out. I could certainly see on Emile Smith Rowe, you know, at, if he doesn't want to leave London, at a Crystal Palace, a Brentford. You know, a side like that. And I think they do well there. And Reece maybe, I think, has a little bit more talent. I'm not saying he can go to a bigger club than Arsenal. But, you know, a team like Everton could use a player like Reece right now. I mean, you know, but yeah, I mean, I think it would be a shame to see him go, but that's life.
When are you starting your agency?
You know, when...
books.
I tell you, when I was working in the film industry, and I was thinking, man, maybe the one gig that got away from me was being an agent. I think I would have made a good agent, actually.
Missed opportunity.
Never too late. Never too late.
Okay.
Still a young'un going through menopause. Oh, I cracked myself up. Okay. Let's talk about, we've got a couple more talking points here with Super Dave. And the next one, process. Okay. Process to possibilities. And this one in particular, thanks Chemo again for the picture. Yeah, I don't think we'll ever get the respect until we win a big one. But yeah, here's Mikel challenging two of the most legendary managers, one very salty. Oh my God, did you see Jurgen Klopp? We just get rid of this a minute. Did you see Jurgen Klopp after with Viaplay, the reporter? I can't remember who the reporter was after they lost. And he was talking to him about mentality or whatever. And Jurgen Klopp just looks at the guy and he goes, that's a really dumb question, you know. And he just got so... He used to be so likable for me. And he's just become a grumpy old man. Maybe he should retire. That's really grumpy.
Yeah, I think he just gets away with it because he puts a little, I don't know, he kind of smiles while he's having a moan at them at the same time. So he doesn't, whereas I think the problem with Arteta is he can't, you know, because of his heritage, he has to look angry when he's angry. But for some reason, Klopp seems to and he's big smile, but he's really having...
Big gnashes.
Yeah, but he's really having a right moan up.
Yeah. Do you know what, Newman? You're going to get a yellow card because I've seen you say a lot of dumb things tonight and you usually say dumb things. You know, I'm sick and tired of people pointing the finger. The media have a lot to answer for. But when you have to ask a question after an intense game like that, trust me, it's like your brain goes into, it's like a film where you're trying to, like, you know, figure out the code before the bomb goes off. And you're like, oh my God, I don't think I should ask that. I think I should ask that. Maybe I should ask that. Maybe I should avoid that. What do you ask them after they've just lost to their biggest rivals? And sometimes it is impossible to get it right. And so, yes, there are a lot of times where media ask stupid questions, Dave, but you do comms. You know, you've been in presses as well. It's not always easy. And the fact that they lost in the manner in which they did, I'd have been like, you know what? That was a tough loss. You've recovered from losses before. You're suffering from injury. Stroke his ego a little bit and then leave it open-ended so then he could just talk as opposed to just go in with... But it wasn't the worst question in the world. He was just rude.
No, yeah. Like I don't think, obviously, like I said, I didn't see it, but by the sound of it, I don't think that the reporter is really that out of order. Asking a dumb question because he's asking it because he wants a reaction as well. And sometimes, you know, with Klopp, he might have given that explanation that you said. If he'd been winning 2-0 and he was asked the same question, then it would be a different matter. But maybe the timing just wasn't that good. But I think they're both sound like they're just playing a game with each other. Klopp's reaction to a lot of things, you know, is really friendly and smiley, and he's always playing that game. But it's always when they're winning, and that's, you know, that, I think that's totally understandable. If someone asked me that question, I'd probably say the same.
Yeah, this is why interviewing like managers as soon as games end and stuff like that, I just don't get it. Let's see. Going to get some veggies. Yes, please. Definitely. Thanks, Tony. See, I'm going to make a veggie bowl tonight.
there you go,
people.
Have you got your personal chopper on it?
Yes, I've gone off the rails here a little bit, but hey ho. Okay, let's talk about the coaching staff. How important are coaching staff? Possibilities, process to possibilities, Dave. Take me into the era you were playing. You mentioned that, you know, at the top of the show, that some coaches will work with players in relation to Ben White and the England setup. It seems like Mikel's got his coaching staff down to a T here. And when you go from process to possibilities, do you think he's got enough experience around him to pull off the big ones? Does it concern you sometimes? I mean, other than AirPod Albert, they're all pretty young, but they seem like very ambitious guys, and the one-on-ones that they do with the players seem to be working. The set piece coach has done a tremendous job since coming from City. What's your take on their role as it relates to Mikel?
As it relates to Mikel?
Yeah, like Mikel's the decision maker, right?
Yeah. I think he's obviously directing operations, and he's obviously got their CVs. He knows their history. He knows their experience, what they've done at other places. But I think just like the team or on the pitch, I think he gets these people who he knows can do exactly the job he wants. Mm-hmm. And then he tasks them with them jobs, like any good manager would do. And I think the team are working. I think it needs those different coaches as well. I saw a couple of the videos. I also saw, I like the one with Ben White as well, about him not knowing how good he is and stuff like that. And, you know, mm-hmm. how important he is and how he sees things so early and how his anticipation is better than, you know, or the levels of it are like phenomenal, really, really high. I think from that point of view, that's just Arteta speaking, but not having enough time to do it yourself and doing it through these people who are really good at what they do.
Yeah, they really do seem to have that X factor.
Yeah, I mean, the set pieces and that, there's, you know, they're so hard, and you take that away from a manager and he's just concentrating on the motivational stuff. And then, you know, I would imagine he still gets something on his desk in the morning and says, you know, I've got this free kick worked out or this corner, what do you think? I think he still has the final decision on saying, yeah, I think that'll work, or no, we'll have a look at it and see if it works. And, you know, he makes the final decision. But I think having that pressure taken off of him and just being able to direct is just making him more experienced and stronger in his position as a manager. And we said that earlier about him being ambitious. And I think he's got a good chain of command there. And the players need it, as I say. You need different aspects. When we was a player, we had just the first team manager and a coach. And the coach would take the warm-up, set all the cones out mostly, to have all the banter with the players, and the manager would do the serious stuff. That's kind of in general how it worked. So they used to take a lot of the sting out of it for the manager. And I think, you know, they play an important role, and the players are lucky to have five or six of them in different areas.
Yeah. Okay, so can this coaching team, okay, the proof will be in the May pudding, but I've got one for you, because I've said that if they pull off, I don't know the Premier League, but definitely the Champions League, if they pull off winning the Champions League, I have said on this show, and I've said it to you before, that I would put it up there with the achievement of Anfield 89 And I would also put it up there with the achievement of the Invincibles. It's a trophy we've never won. Like I said, all the narrative of us being losers in Europe, modern day Europe, closed down. I mean, it's been since you and Kev that have played that we haven't won, you know, as I said, a cup in Europe. Am I over exaggerating it? I mean, this was a stupendous night. You were there. I in the stands with Super Kev. You guys were watching the game in the stands with the fans, and you won the big ones with the club. Am I overly complimenting an achievement like that, or do you think it's fair?
I don't know. It'd have to be a goal in the last minute like that, and it might sort of compare and have that sort of tension. I think that night at Anfield, I find that hard to be topped. I mean, Aguero scored, didn't he, to win the league, I think, for Man City, in very similar fashion, right at the end of a game. And, you know, but no one talks about that, really. Only a few people up north.
They do. A lot of people up north think it's better than 89, but
no, it's not. It didn't have that emotion. It didn't have Steve McMahon going, talking to the bench and going, you know, 1 minute or whatever like that. And the funny thing is that whenever you see him at a golf day or, you know, a dinner that we come and then someone will say that to him and it pisses him off so much. He really hates it.
You know what, Dave? I'm surprised that Stevie Nicol continues to come on this show because he's so classy. I love him to bits. He comes on and we put this picture up for him all the time when he comes on. But he takes it on the chin.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but it is.
But maybe it's not the case of the occasion, the achievement is what I'm talking about. Because yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous. Being invincible is ridiculous. I mean, Man City, you could say for them, yeah, because Man United were celebrating just 30 seconds before, like they won the title, and then your noisy neighbours go and win it, you know, in the last second. So for them, it's their moment. I just think achievement-wise, to win the Champions League in this era against a Bayern Munich, a Carlo Ancelotti, you've got Kylian Mbappe, one of the greatest ever, apparently. You've got the money of Man City. All right, Jurgen Klopp isn't in it this year. But to do it in this era, that would be pretty monumental.
Yeah, but you're not beating all them teams. You're only beating the ones you draw. So, you know, you do miss a few of them out, the big teams. And I think it is just it's a cup competition. You know, and you take more risks. They're different sort of games. But I can't see how that compares with being invincibles for a start. The fashion of the football week in, week out of that invincible season is unbelievable. And you still, correct me if I'm wrong, we won the league that year. So it's a good achievement. You could still be invincible and not win the league if you just, if you drew every week. You never lost, did you? You know, but you certainly wouldn't win the league. But to have that achievement, I think, yeah, it don't compare to the Champions League. I get what you're saying about playing against some of the top players in the world, top clubs. You do, you want to be, they're great for the fans to remember those great European nights when we beat someone, you know, who was top of their game in Europe. Because they're different nights for the fans as well. They will be talked about. They are glorious nights and occasions. But again, I think I've got to disagree with you. I think you are being a bit...
emotional.
Emotional. Seeing it through rose-tinted glasses, darling. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. As my good friend Dan Pott said, the streets aren't ready, Soph. The streets aren't ready.
You know what's going to happen? Harry Kane is going to score a goal against Arsenal.
Guaranteed.
It's guaranteed.
Yeah. Guaranteed. You could put that. We know we've got to score two goals already, right? We know that. It's just guaranteed. Yeah.
For two penalties. Dive.
All right, join in with Dave. Oh, I mean, do you know what I was thinking after this weekend? I was thinking, man, every football fan is a little salty. We just can't compliment another team when they win. Liverpool fans today and yesterday, so salty. Man United, okay, I do not like them like every other Arsenal fan. But what they did against Liverpool, all right, when they're garbage and they're 100th in the league and they've got nothing going for them, and to beat them, the biggest rival, to get into a semi-final, I know you don't want to say, well done, we lost, but do we have to be salty on absolutely everything? Do you find the saltiness is getting a little too salty? Or am I just going soft?
I don't know how to answer that. There's a lot of salty in there.
I mean, can't we just say, okay, if that was us and that happened to us against Tottenham, God forbid, I can hear you guys saying, bite your tongue, Soph, but let's just say it did.
Yeah.
And they win like that. What are you going to do? What are you going to say? I would not go on social media. I would lay low and I would be like, fuck it, we lost.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what I'd do.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
You can't take no notice of the saltiness. That's just, you know, that's, I don't think that's everybody. I think most people just take it on the chin and just, you know, will say it was a bad day at the office or whatever. I don't think they'll, but it's social media, isn't it? That's why it's out there. That's why we see it. Most of the time, back in the day, people just talk well of their clubs. You didn't hear nobody slagging off their clubs, win, lose or draw. I think it's just the fact that it's just out there more and people can have opinions and they get gratification from it and other people, you know, it's like fake friends. But
I mean, Liverpool fans saying, oh, three lucky goals. Shut up. They scored. Yeah.
And defensive errors were poor from Liverpool. I mean, for that final goal, you know, they almost tumbled over whilst we're running backwards. it was almost embarrassing how easy it was. And I didn't think the finish was that great. And, you know, for a Liverpool keeper who's been playing brilliant all season when he's played, you know, I thought it was, I thought they made bad errors.
That goal reminded me of, I was at the Old Trafford game, not this last season, the first game of the season. It was one of the first games in August and we lost 3-1. We were battering them that day, Dave. We should have won that 3-1 ourselves. And we ended up losing it 3-1. And that last, there was a goal that Bruno Fernandes passed, it broke our line. We were playing really high anyway. And it just reminded me a little bit of that goal. And at the end of that, I was thinking, you know what? They found a way to win. I loved the occasion. I had a brilliant time. I don't think I've had a better day away from home than I did that day. We were losing and we were singing and we were having an awesome time. And so it brings me on to Hillier's quick fire hits. Okay. Have Arsenal away fans quickly become the best in the league? I think our away fans are brilliant.
Our away support is brilliant. Yeah. That's because I think most of them, and I know quite a few people, are staunch home fans as well, season ticket holders. So there is a big, there's still a big group of, I don't want to say homegrown fans, but more local fans, you know, fans brought up in the area, or I'm not necessarily that. I know people that, a guy that travels from Dover every week, goes all over the country, watches the under 23s and everything. And there's still that hardcore, and that, you know, they've taken the atmosphere from the Emirates into away stadiums as well, you know, with the singing, the harmonies and that, there's some of the great songs they've got about the players, you know, they've got some good tunes at the moment.
Yeah, they're brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And I think they've spawned a lot of other supporters to try and keep up with us and do the same. Okay, you guys, you've been asking for it. Here it is. Here he is, Kivior. Bless his cotton socks, his Adidas cotton socks. He's been great. There's no doubt about it. Would you sell Zinchenko in the summer? Got my espresso. Ooh, lovely.
Difficult one. Would Zinchenko put up with not being involved until the summer? Would be a question you'd have to ask yourself as well. I think obviously Kivior came in because he wasn't fit originally, I think, or, you know, started that position. But I think where it's evolved, especially like we spoke on the last podcast about the freedom it's giving Ben White to come into the middle, because I think Saliba's a more natural right-sided and right-back positional player than Saliba would be on the left. I think, you know, he doesn't need to be covered, Saliba. I think Gabriel needs to have that cover of Saliba on that left side. So it works perfectly. And with Ben White coming inside, we get that rotation between Odegaard and Saka. The left-hand side's pretty simple, isn't it? We normally play, even when Trossard comes on, he plays quite wide and then drifts in the middle. Martinelli plays out there. So that's a different setup down that side. And I think Kivior suits it. So is there really a position for Zinchenko, or does the manager want to keep him because he can do the opposite on the other side, play Tomiyasu maybe if Ben White gets injured or down in some form, and do it on the opposite side again, put Zinchenko in that inside midfield position. But it will be Zinchenko's decision. Again, you know, if the manager knows he's not happy and he wants first team football, I don't think he'd stop him. But they certainly have a conversation. And I think the manager would want to keep him just to have as many good players in positions as he can.
I agree with you on that one. I don't think he's done quite yet. And he's become the new scapegoat. No. And I think, again, Arsenal fans tend to like to have a scapegoat. And it seems like this season, Zinchenko's one of them.
All the fans go on about wanting, like, you know, great subs and great people on the bench to come in for the players who are playing if they get injured or something like that. Well, this is just the case of that. Now we've got two decent players fighting for that position, same as we have at right back with Ben White and Tomiyasu. So you just got to stay. It goes back to the old thing, doesn't it? You've got to stay on top of your game and hopefully not get injured. But everybody wants to strong, and then we kind of think, oh, is it unfair on him? Well, no, the manager wants a strong squad.
Agree. And Jason, Timber hasn't played a lick. He's played half hour and he had a great pre-season. Nothing's guaranteed. He's got to come in and prove himself. And we did a show with Tom Canton, underrated, overrated, and we were saying how he's overrated because everyone thinks he's the Don and he hasn't played anything yet. And we said that with respect, of course, but yeah.
I watched him in the preseason friendlies, and I thought he played it straight away. He hit the ground running. But we've seen that with other fullbacks and defenders.
Exactly.
And it is a bit of consistency. And unfortunately, our expectations were quite high. We didn't know what he's got. But I think when he gets fit, I don't know when he is fit. By the way,
I don't think we'll see him what's the point in risking him? I don't think we see him until next season.
No, but also, you know, he's got to play well to get in front of Kivior if Kivior's playing, or to get in front of Zinchenko at the moment, and that's just the way it is. So he's not just caught back in the side. He's still going to get small opportunities like the likes of Emile Smith-Rowe and Eddie Nketiah have, and Reece Nelson. And he's going to have to perform well. So he's going to be in a position of those. He won't be pushing people out of the team that are playing well without playing well himself. So we'll see when he comes back.
Agree. Okay, these next two will be quick fire. All right. So, Captain O, has he reached Kevin De Bruyne levels? Is he Europe's best midfielder now, let alone the Premier League's best midfielder?
Difficult. I mean, I'm not genned up on all the top midfielders completely in Europe, but I think just from the levels, I think he's got more to come. So I don't think he's as good as he could be. I think De Bruyne has been as good as he can be, and he's now at that sort of plateau in his career where he's going to try and maintain how good he is for as long as he can. But with Odegaard, I think he'll get better as well. I think certainly for Arsenal, he's just as important as right now as De Bruyne was at his peak for Man City in their Premier League championship wins. So, I think he's certainly right up there, but got more to come.
Okay. Who do you fear most? I mean, after yesterday, I fear City always. But who do you fear most going into these last nine games of the season? City or Liverpool?
Well, obviously City, because we've got to play them. So that's my biggest fear coming up in just over, well, a couple of weeks, isn't it? Just over nearly a couple of weeks. So, yeah, that's going to be a tough one. But it's nice that we've got a long rest before that game. You know, we ain't
obviously
the game's not going on now. But, you know, the manager's got to keep them going for that period of time. So that makes me worry a little bit. So definitely... But I fear what Man City can do with their experience and knowledge of being in this position, with what happened last season as well. You know, Arsenal didn't have the greatest finish. So, yeah, I don't fear Liverpool. I think they'll make their own mistakes.
Yeah, a lot of fans think that. Do you agree with a lot of Arsenal fans, Dave, who say, if we beat City, we win the title? Do you agree with that?
No, because, I mean, you've just got to think back to last season. We lost two games right at the end, didn't we? I think Brighton was one.
Southampton,
yeah.
That was brutal, that one. Oof, yeah, I was in Chicago.
Think 6 points, you know. And prior to that, I think we had three on the row draws where we dropped 2 points a game. And you just think it's just all about consistency at that point of the season. But I think it's definitely going to be a big game. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if Arsenal can play as well as they are now against everybody else for the rest of the season, but just raise it a little bit against Man City, then I think we've got a good chance still.
Yeah, I agree with Eugene. I do think they fear us a little bit this season. Don't know why, but I feel like we've instilled some fear. But
I saw cracks in Man City in the Liverpool game against Liverpool. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just felt they was uncomfortable. They felt pinned in, and you don't normally see that about Man City. And you know, the body language weren't great. So there's definitely cracks in there. You can definitely crack them. And I think, yeah, maybe we have got under their skin a little bit.
How do you think we handle? Because I think that we're still a club that likes hunting versus being the hunted. I think it serves us better to not be on top, but still have some type of control. I know that may sound silly, but goal difference gives us some control. Do you think we can handle being the hunted versus we failed being the hunted last season?
Yeah, I think if you look at the stats, certainly up until when we just started free scoring, the games we played best in, I think, and won all this season and last season, most of them, we didn't have total domination of possession. You know, the 75-25s we had and the 70-30s, maybe we didn't play as well in those games and as exciting and as good a movement. We just had lots of the ball but couldn't break teams down. I think that's due to a lot of them playing low block and that as well. We could use that excuse. But at the end of the day, you know, we've shown that even with teams that play a low block, we can still be exciting, dominating, fast in around that box. And, you know, so, yeah, I don't think that's a big thing. But when you look at the top games, yeah, we do give a little bit more possession. It might be the 55, sort of 45 in our favour. And then we seem to have a better game. I think that's just because the other team, bit more possession, bit more confidence. They come out and try and play a little bit more, and it allows us the space to kill them off.
You've killed them off tonight, Hills. That's all I can say. An epic 1 hour, 23 minutes and counting on pure, legit football facts and knowledge right here. Dropping it left, right, and centre.
Right.
No, it's been absolutely brilliant. Here's an image I think you'll like. So... this, the U15 International Tournament, Premier League U15 International Tournament, Arsenal Football Club, the winners. And may I say, a very proud moment for Brando Bailey-Joseph, who scored a hat-trick, was the player of the tournament. And he's a lovely young man. And I've watched him play football and rugby as a kid. He went to school with my nephew. And this kid is very special. And because I had you on, Dave, and I know what you know this feels like at this level for Brando and his teammates, what a beautiful moment. And I thought you could say a few words to them.
If I can say any, obviously, congratulations. You know, when you win things, is special. But what is special and what's special about football, and they'll all know this because, you know, it goes about saying, is every player who's won any cup and the team have had a picture done like that, and it makes all of us feel the same way, whether it's in the lower leagues or right at the top of your game. They ain't going to feel any better than that. So without they're in a very special club now. They know how it feels to win something. And you know, when you get into the first team and you play for the first time and you look around the dressing room, that's how everybody felt when they had that special moment. And that's what football gives you. So they're the ones to cherish. But that looks just like when we won the FA Youth Cup and we had a picture done. People laying in the same positions, all the rest of you leaning over. That's what football means to footballers. And to have that togetherness is a special thing. Yeah.
That's lovely. Well said. Well said, Hills. And congratulations to the team for making it. It's just beautiful to see. Henty is talking about your debut, April 18th, 1986, home to Leighton, 6-1, Merson with a brace, Allen an own goal. Is he correct? I think I got it all out.
Debut 1886 against...
Not 1886, that's the year the club was founded.
Sorry, 1986.
Benjamin Button.
Although I was only 16. Is he talking about...
It's not South your...
League, 6-1, Merson and Roebuck with a brace.
That's not your pro debut.
It's because I'm trying to read it on a phone. It's really difficult.
Yeah. The Southeast Counties League, yeah, Leighton Orient.
Allen an own goal.
Yeah, and Merson apparently scored a brace. You got him there. You got me there. Because 86, he was young.
He was young.
Yeah.
I was just an apprentice, but that must have been my... I don't remember playing with Merson in my first game, to be honest.
Yeah, I haven't heard you talk about it, so... But we'll investigate. But he definitely wasn't playing in 1886. I can vouch for him on that one.
No, although I look it.
Give Dave a follow on the old social. It's Hillier with a double R. Dave Hillier, right? There's no underscore, is there? Dave Hillier, give him a follow. Beautiful stuff from him again. Don't forget to visit Zenith Coins. Get your 10% off HSNB10. And also, Newman has asked me to rescind his yellow card. I'm going to let Dave make that decision and we'll make the announcement on Twitter, Newman, to see if VAR will pull it back. We'll let you know. Brilliant stuff. Dave, thanks again for joining. Wonderful. I appreciate you being my wingman tonight. Thank you, squaddies, for joining. Don't forget to hit the like button on the way out. And look out on the community page in the old Twitter sphere for more on live shows this week. Give your love to Super Kev. Super Kev, we love you. And as Super Kev would say, don't forget to tell your loved ones you love them. At ease, squaddies, at ease. Hope you've enjoyed the show.
Mind the gap between the train and the platform. Please stand clear of the discussion doors. The next stop is Highbury Squad.
Just so you guys know, there's